From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Grillot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. Earlier this week, President Obama asked congressional leaders to postpone a vote on legislation that would authorize the use of force against Syria.
And we will work together in consultation with Russia and China to put forward a resolution at the UN Security Council requiring Assad to give up his chemical weapons and to ultimately destroy them under international control.
We'll check in with Joshua Landis to learn what's next in the volatile region.
Even if Russia can get him to give up the chemical weapons, he's in a position to trade for more conventional weapons.
And later, I'm joined by journalist Ariel Reshef.
I have more of a feeling of fear sometimes in the stories that we cover here in Oklahoma than I sometimes did in Israel. And I think it's just a very different sense of personal security.
These conversations in this half hour after the news. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grillot. Joshua Landis, Rebecca Cruz, we must return to this issue of Syria. Joshua, we have you here, the expert. So we've seen President Obama made a speech this week. It seems to be shifting a bit from the military option to potentially now a diplomatic option. How did this happen? How did we get to where we are now?
This has been through more permutations, and I think everybody is a little bit, you know, everybody's got a sore neck from sort of watching his tennis match go through. And it started out, we thought he was going to strike at the Syrians for using chemical weapons. And then at the last minute, Friday evening, he says, nope, I'm going to put up for a vote to Congress. And then it very quickly became clear that Congress was going to vote against him.
But wasn't that predictable? I mean, didn't he know that it would probably be overturned? I mean, why would he even kick it to Congress to begin with when became clear very quickly that it was going to be overturned?
Well, you know, he was all alone. We have to remember that Britain had just done this radical thing, which was for the British Parliament to vote no against their prime minister. So all of a sudden, Obama was looking over his shoulder and he realized there was nobody behind him.
So he goes,
NATO
so
was
he just,
against it. UN is against it. Britain, his closest ally, had just said no.
But the French are for it. And so, he's got at least
But the French are for it oratorically. But what are the French really going to do? I mean, ultimately, it's American cruise missiles, American ships that are going to be out there, and all alone, he's going to be doing something. And not only is he going to be doing it alone in the world, but Americans don't want it. 70% of Americans were being polled saying they don't want to do this.
And okay, so that's the case, right? So that's the military
option. He needed to at least shore up the Republicans. The Republicans were having this both ways, and they were going to chop him down to size if he did anything wrong.
But then Secretary Kerry makes this kind of off-the-cuff remark about – well, that we can end this diplomatically if they just turn over all the chemical weapons.
Was a that journalist was asked that... him, is there any way that Assad can get out of this strike? And he said, well, they can give up all of their chemical weapons immediately, and I know that's not going to happen. And even after he said that, 15 minutes after, his spokeswoman came out and said this was a rhetorical question.
So it was a mistake. That wasn't planned at all.
But on the other hand, we've been hearing from top diplomats that this sort of conversation has been going on for almost a year with Russia, and that the Russians and Americans have been talking about ways to get rid of those chemical weapons. So it's not completely out of the blue. I think that there was a gaffe, that this wasn't a setup completely. But in the back, Kerry knew that the Russians and Americans had been talking about different diplomatic avenues.
A week ago, as you said, this was kind of Obama's game. Cameron was involved. And this week, we had two new leaders that kind of took the stage. First off, with Pope Francis, who came out 6 months into his term, really making his first political statement, anti-U.S. strikes in Syria. And then Putin comes out with this new plan. So we've got some other players in the field now.
Well, Russia is the big player. And this really is a great victory for Moscow. I'm sure that they were doing some shots of Stolichnaya back there at the Kremlin, because here was a situation where the United States was about to unilaterally strike at one of their chief allies in the Middle East. All of a sudden, Russia's back in the game. America hasn't struck, and everybody's looking to Moscow for a solution. So, and Putin has got a op-ed in the New York Times saying, "Oh, my good friend Obama, and we're going to use peace, and America shouldn't use war so much." I mean, he's sounding – I mean, talk about
chutzpah. It's almost Cold War. This is kind of the most power influence that Russia has had on the global stage for quite some time, or at least this week.
It is, but already the arm wrestling has begun because France took a 5-point plan to the Security Council saying we want a Chapter 7 condemnation of Syria. It has to put up chemical weapons within 15 days. And that Chapter 7 means you can use force if things don't unfold the way they're supposed to. Russia said, no, forget it. We're not going to go to the Security Council. There's going to be no resolution. We're not putting force on the table. So already we see two completely different scenarios being put forward.
But this also means Assad has won in some ways, right?
It empowers Assad in this position, doesn't it?
You
know, Salim Idris, the head of the Free Syrian Army, the opposition group, just blew his top when he heard this. And he said, Putin's a terrorist and Obama's been snookered into this. You know, they were furious. They were praying that Washington was finally going to join the fight and take down Assad. And now Assad's at the negotiating table talking to America as a partner. This legitimizes him, and he's going to drag and wait and use Russia as and even if Russia can get him to give up the chemical weapons, he's in a position to trade for more conventional weapons.
But the diplomatic option makes America look very weak.
On the other hand, the bigger picture of this is that, as the president said, America does not want to be the policeman of the world anymore. And as we step down from that role, we're going to meet situations like this where third world dictators do things that normally America would step up to the plate and stop them from doing. And we're not going to do a thing.
Well, Joshua Landis and Rebecca Cruz, as always, thank you for discussing this topic.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about this show or any questions you may have. Send us a tweet at WorldviewsKGOU or leave us a comment on the Worldviews page of KGOU.org. Coming up, I'll talk with Oklahoma City television journalist Ariel Reshef. The KOCO reporter and anchor returned to her hometown in November after spending several years reporting and anchoring English language news for the Israeli Broadcasting Authority. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat. Oklahoma City native Ariel Reshef returned to her hometown last year after spending nearly half a decade living and working in Israel. She earned a master's degree in diplomacy and conflict studies and then started her career as a journalist with the Israeli Broadcasting Authority. Here she is reporting last year on an Israeli air campaign in Gaza for her new employer, KOCO Channel 5 in Oklahoma City.
For the first time since the Gulf War 2 decades ago, rockets fired by Hamas have landed near Tel Aviv, Israel's commercial capital, and near the spiritual epicenter of Jerusalem. The conflict raged today as Hamas pounded Israeli towns, and Israel responded with a punishing air assault in Gaza.
Ariel Reshef, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. You are from Oklahoma, and so you have your roots here. But you've traveled quite a bit. You've lived overseas, studied in another state, and ended up in Israel, of all places, and doing journalism. Give us a little bit of background about how you went from growing up in Oklahoma City to anchoring the news in Israel.
It's been quite a journey. First, I graduated from Heritage Hall here in Oklahoma and then decided that I wanted an experience out of state at a state college at Indiana University. And so I started my degree program there and went through a series of majors. Couldn't quite decide what I wanted to do, all from operatic performance to fashion design to this and that. And I finally landed on political science and Jewish history. And so I pursued those very vigorously. And I guess the political science aspect led me to international relations. And I think probably every student can relate to the fact that they have a professor here and there that really touches them and really inspires them. And that was the case for me. That was Dr. Dina Speckler. And she encouraged me to pursue the path of international affairs. And so I became very passionate, even more passionate than I already was, about that course. So I ended up TAing a course in international affairs and then deciding to study abroad in Tel Aviv.
And that was really, you know, I have traveled to Israel throughout my whole life. My father is Israeli. So I'm very familiar with the region as a tourist. But when you study abroad, you get a more intimate look at the people, at the region, at the complexities that face people there. And I just wanted more. So once I was finished with my study abroad program, I came back, finished my senior year at Indiana, and decided that I wanted to go to D.C. and work for a nonprofit there. For 3.5 years, and found that I wanted to have an abroad experience. And luckily, at the time, my boyfriend, then fiance, then now husband, also shared that vision. So we moved to Israel. I applied for the program in diplomacy and conflict studies at the Interdisciplinary Center in Herzliya, and really gravitated towards the classes there and felt that I was getting a firsthand look at the conflict and also just at the people involved. And also the one of the remarkable things about my college there was that the professors were practitioners in their fields of expertise. So not only were they teaching courses, but they were actually out in the field doing what they were teaching. So we got a really amazing firsthand look at all of the different aspects of the conflict and of conflict resolution. Fast forward into the journalism field, and I call this...
That's quite a leap. So you had an amazing experience, but then to leap from that experience into journalism, how does that happen?
So I come from a very non-traditional background in journalism, and I never expected that I would become a journalist, but I finished my degree at the Interdisciplinary Center, and that very same day, we used to watch a program called IBA News, which was the only English broadcast in Israel. So it's diplomatic affairs, it's economic affairs, sports, everything you can imagine about Israeli society, but it's told in English. And it, like I said, it's the only broadcast. So my family was actually visiting Israel, and we were all watching the broadcast. And it was my very last day at the IDC, and I was still trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And they made a kind of a joke on the program about how they were looking for new anchors. So they started listing criteria, one of them being that you're an Israeli citizen, an American citizen, that you have a background in international affairs, and of course you have, most importantly, on-camera presence. Well, my family turns around to me and they say, well, it doesn't really matter that you don't have the on-camera presence part because we think you can do it, so you should apply for this job.
Well, that's an amazing thing in terms of luck and timing. You just happened to hear this announcement.
Exactly.
And there you go.
I call it my serendipitous twist of fate. Yeah. So I very reluctantly at the time listened to my husband, my father, and my mother, who all told me I should apply for this job, and blindly sent my CV to the people that were reading. And at first, they sent me back a note, very lovely note, saying, we really appreciate your experience. We think you have the right experience. However, you have no on-camera experience whatsoever, so no thank you. Well, so I accepted that, and my husband said, absolutely not. You don't take no for an answer. Send them an email and say you can't say no until you at least meet with me. So I sent that email also very reluctantly, and finally I found out that it pays off because my then the chief anchor there that was making the decisions called me in for a group audition. I came in with a series of other journalists who had far more experience than I did and read blind from the teleprompter for the first time in my entire life at that audition. And the very next day I got a call from our news director telling me he wanted to hire me. Which was pretty remarkable. I thought he might have misread the when he was going down the list of journalists that they had interviewed. I thought maybe he had looked at the wrong phone number and called me up instead of someone else. But I was, needless to say, extremely shocked and excited.
My guest is Ariel Reshef, the weekend evening anchor and a reporter for KOCO Channel 5 in Oklahoma City. More of our conversation right after this break. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews on KGOU. I'm Suzette Grelot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. I'm speaking with Ariel Reshef, the weekend evening anchor and a reporter for KOCO Channel 5 in Oklahoma City. She returned to her home state in November after spending several years working for the Israeli Broadcasting Authority. When we left off, she described her non-traditional entry into the field after earning her master's degree in diplomacy and conflict studies. You've reported all over Israel. You've engaged in meeting all kinds of interesting people and topics. Tell us a little bit about some of the most interesting things you did while you were reporting in Israel.
Well, very relevant to, of course, the course of events that we're seeing now in the Middle East. I was there when what has now been dubbed the Arab Spring began. So I saw all of these convulsions in the Arab world and all of the different political aspirations of the people in the Arab world. So that was absolutely fascinating. I actually anchored the broadcast where Hosni Mubarak was ousted, and that was a tremendous experience. You know, growing up reading the history of Israel, the history of Egypt, the history of the relations between the two, it was an incredibly important topic for the people that were tuning into my broadcast to hear about Hosni Mubarak being deposed, and that comes with a lot of weight. So that was one of my, I think, highlights of my experience. I also was up in the north of Israel during the Gilad Shalit exchange deal and had to see both the positive and negative sides of that exchange deal. 1,027 Palestinian prisoners were released in exchange for just one Israeli soldier. So I saw the jubilation in Gilad Shalit's hometown, but then the pain on the faces of the families who had lost loved ones in various suicide bombing attacks or terrorist attacks at the Supreme Court arguing against that deal. And then also the elation on the Palestinian side to see their family members come and return home to them. So that's a very, very complex topic that I felt very privileged to have a window into. And I also interviewed some very notable people like President Shimon Peres, who is a stalwart in the Middle East in terms of political action and peace-seeking efforts. And so that was fascinating to me. No matter where you stand on the issues that surround the region, he's one of the key players there. Also, Jabil Rajoub, who is an active Palestinian authority, or was then active in the Palestinian Authority, talking to actresses like Sarah Silverman, who come for their first time to Israel, and having a little bit of a laugh with them about their experience. A very diverse spectrum of people that I had interviewed there.
So an amazing experience then you've had, not only just that background and then career and the movement into journalism, but certainly in Israel, an absolutely fascinating place. And our listeners will know that I've recently visited Israel and we've reported on it quite often here on Worldviews. But so now that you're back in Oklahoma, what, if anything, you know, can you draw from that experience? I mean, you really, you know, as you said, entered into journalism in kind of a very unusual or non-traditional way, getting your start in journalism in a foreign country, and then bringing it back here to Oklahoma, your hometown, and how you capitalize on some of those skills and the training and the experiences you have. I mean, you're not necessarily interviewing people like Shimon Peres right here in Oklahoma City, but what is it that you could say is very similar, or what are some of the things that transfer easily from being a journalist in Israel, and maybe what are some of the differences?
Well, I would say yes, I'm not interviewing Shimon Peres on a regular basis here in Oklahoma, but every single person that I interview here in Oklahoma is just as important to me. And it's important that any journalist remember that no matter whether you're interviewing a head of state or a farmer who's having trouble with his crop or someone who's just lost a son or a daughter, it's just as important to maintain your humanity and your integrity no matter who you're interviewing. So one of the things that we have discussed previously before this interview was the aspect of storytelling. And storytelling really to me is the same whether you're doing it in Israel or you're doing it in Egypt or you're doing it in Syria or you're doing it in Oklahoma. And the people that you meet along the way are those who are highlighted in the stories that you tell. And it's important that you can find commonality with their narrative no matter who they are and from what walk of life they come from.
Well, I think one of the things that you're really touching on there, Ariel, is that and you've experienced yourself, is that we're all humans and that we all have our stories to tell. And so regardless of whether you're telling stories about what's going on in Israel or in Oklahoma or any other part of the world, you know, everyone has their stories. And so is that, do you think, I mean, given your experience, that that's really what journalists even do for us, is help us make those connections?
Absolutely. I think the task of being a journalist is one that I take extremely seriously because it gives us a window into people's most intimate moments, their most intimate thoughts. And I witnessed many times as a journalist, but also as a human being when I was in Israel, interactions between Israelis and Palestinians on a regular basis that were incredibly friendly, incredibly loving. Some of my Israeli friends had Palestinian friends as their very best friends. And watching those interactions, you think to yourself, how can it be that this is such an intractable conflict when the people at their very core can find a way to get along on a regular basis? So I think, you know, one of the tasks of a journalist is to bring the humanity and the human aspect of the people that we're talking about, not just the conflict. When we talk about the conflict, we see on various news networks the images of conflict in the region, especially when you're talking about the Middle East. And sometimes it gives us a bit of a warped perspective about what actually happens on a regular basis. You know, when I show people a picture of Tel Aviv, they're shocked because they don't realize that it's a beach town with discos and, you know, with lots of fabulous restaurants and seaside experiences. Really active, vibrant gay community, something that you would never really notice. And so that was something that was really compelling to me. And it really transcends all of the different conflicts that occur in the world, that there's just amazing human stories to tell, whether it's on the Israeli side, the Palestinian side, or it's Oklahomans right here that are dealing with issues.
Well, something I find interesting, too, is the issue, particularly for journalists, because journalists put themselves in harm's way often. And I mean, even in Oklahoma, journalists are getting out there and they're telling the stories of tornadoes, you know, as they're you know, nearby. Journalists all over the country that put themselves in harm's way. Journalists, obviously, you know, in Israel and elsewhere, and now in the Middle East and Egypt, you know, that are losing their lives, in fact. So, I mean, what are the comparisons you might make along those lines? And what are some of the safety issues that you faced in Israel versus some of the safety? I mean, I know they're different. Circumstances are different, but still they're there, right?
Right. Absolutely. And I think that's a very important issue to touch on. When I was in Israel, I reported twice from the Gaza border when there was an instance of cross-border violence. So there were Katyusha rockets and various sorts coming towards Israel, and Israel was launching operations on the other side of the border. And I was standing just next to an Iron Dome missile defense system that was deploying actively. And you know, getting rid of those rockets that were coming towards Israel. Never once in Israel did I feel unsafe. And I know that may sound very strange, but I think as a journalist, you get yourself into a mindset where it's so important for you to tell the story in that moment that you don't want to be reckless by any stretch of the imagination, but that you really want to try to focus on what you're doing. And it helps. It's almost a coping mechanism. It helps us sort of drown out the sounds around us. And so I think that was one thing that I was able to do during that instance of violence. On a daily basis, I have to say, and this is one of those things that people kind of look at me dumbfounded when I say this, when I would walk the streets of Tel Aviv as a female by myself at 2 a.m, I felt incredibly safe. I never had my purse snatched. I never was mugged. I never worried about a drive-by shooting. And, you know, I'm not saying that Oklahoma is a violent place by any stretch, because I absolutely love this place. But there are definitely drawbacks sometimes to, you know, certain stories that we do. And I have more of a feeling of fear sometimes in the stories that we cover here in Oklahoma than I sometimes did in Israel. And I think it's just a very different sense of personal security and a very different sense of where we are in the world.
Well, I think that's definitely a reminder to us that journalists, in bringing that sense of humanity and bringing that sense of, you know, telling the stories of different human beings around the world, that they do so sometimes at their own personal risk, no matter where they are. So we appreciate the work that you do. We thank you for being with us. Hopefully this hasn't been a very dangerous experience here on Worldviews
today. No, it's been a pleasure. Absolutely a pleasure.
But thank you so much for joining us on Worldviews, Ariel Reshef.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to my conversation with Ariel Reshef, the weekend evening anchor and a reporter for KOCO Channel 5 in Oklahoma City. You can see a slideshow of her reporting in Israel on our website, kgou.org. Worldviews is a production of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies through a collaborative partnership with KGOU. Brian Hardzinski produces the show, and Hillary Gibson prepares the research for our interviews. For Rebecca Cruz and Joshua Landis, I'm Suzette Gralat.